Good evening. First week in May, it's lighter outside than it seems every week. It gets lighter at this time of night. And then I forget about the darkness, and then in about 6 months, when it starts getting dark again at this time, I will start remembering that, yes, of course, and I will become used to that, and I would forget, and I'll forget about the light. I don't know why, but I maybe it has to do with this weekend we had a meeting with all of the Dana teachers in the lineage, including Bart was present for that. All of Genroshi's successors, and then each of our successors, although there's only Corinne and I who have successors at this point, but Bart will be a successor in a matter of weeks, months, and one of Frank's students too at the end of the year. And so the people with purple rakusus and the teachers were present for this meeting online. And maybe that's why I was thinking about this quote. I don't know, or this incident. So at a retreat, not the most recent retreat in Portugal, but the previous retreat that we had in the south of France, I once looked one day, I looked around during Orioki. And I realized that everyone was drinking the water at the end of the Orioki, after we've cleaned the bowls and the servers come around and they have a bowl and we're supposed to dump our water in there. And I noticed that most people were drinking most of the water and saving a little teeny bit to pour into the server's bowl. And I was really surprised about that. And I observed again. So I watched for a couple of meals to see if that was really what was happening. And that was really what was happening. And so I pointed out at some point, I don't know if it was during a Dharma talk or during a SAMO meeting or something. Debbie was actually at that retreat. I don't know if she remembers this, and I pointed out to them that right before we do that, we chant, the water with which I wash these bowls tastes like ambrosia. I offer it to the various spirits to satisfy them. I offer it to them. It's this most wonderful tasting thing, like ambrosia. And I offer it to the various spirits to satisfy them. I don't drink it myself. I offer it to the spirits. And maybe what led to the confusion, and I said this to everyone, is that when after we've dumped the water in for the servers, into the server's bowl, we are supposed to drink the last drop, whatever is left, just so nothing is wasted. In case there's a drop there, we're supposed to drink that drop, so it won't be wasted. But we're not supposed to save water so that we can drink it, right? We're not supposed to hold something back so that we can drink this ambrosia. And it was almost hurtful for me to see that people were doing this. And I knew very well that it was completely innocent. They weren't thinking, I want to drink this wonderful water. It just somehow, maybe the instruction had not been given during Orioki instructions. It had not been pointed out that that was what the intention was. And I was very happy then to see that, of course, you can imagine, the next meals, people did that. They heard me, they listened to what I said, and they did it. I looked around in Portugal again when during our retreat. I didn't see people doing the same thing. I didn't see people like drinking everything and then saving a little bit to give to the servers. Maybe some people were doing it, but it wasn't generalized. And so I didn't feel the need to say anything about it. And that, the spirit of that small little gesture, which is not small, of course. In Oryoki, all of these little gestures we make are not little. They're not small. Each one is really important and full of meaning and have great impact on our lives. You know, this idea of this ambrosia that tastes so good, I offer it to the various spirits. I don't even know who these spirits are. I don't even know. And the servers, they take the bowl and they throw it into the plants, the water. They don't drink it, the servers. But it's this gesture of generosity, of offering this amazing thing to the various spirits, even if we don't know who the spirits are, even if we don't really know what it is we're offering, you know? And I think I was thinking of that. That came up during our teachers' meeting, actually, because we had all these various topics that had been suggested of what we could talk about for the weekend. So basically we talked about during the weekend what we would like to talk about, something like that, and ended really talking about some very important deep things, you know. And there was this notion of what, as teachers, what would we like to transmit, and Geno Roshi saying something like, it's not even about transmitting, it's about sharing. And that's very much my experience. That's why I came to practice, was to share with others. But and when she said that, and when that subject came onto the table, I thought of this thing from Oryoki of, I don't even know what it is what I'm offering. I don't even know what it is. I don't even know who I'm offering it to, but I'm offering it. I offer it to the various spirits to satisfy them. And it's the same thing, that's the spirit of the Dharma that we share. I sit here and I talk and I don't even know what it is. You know, I don't even know. I don't even know. And it's not important to know. It's important to be generous, to offer it, to share it, whatever it is. Of course, I wouldn't want to, the question also came up is, what is it that I don't want to transmit? So of course, I don't want to share something toxic, right? I don't want to share poisonous water with the various spirits. I don't want to share poison. I don't want to share something that would be harmful to the various spirits. And in that tiny little moment in Oryoki, it's all encapsulated in that little moment, you know? Because this is usually what we think of as wastewater. So we could, you know, we clean our bowls and then this water is dirty or something. But in chant, we say it tastes like ambrosia. And if I look at that in terms of, and the same thing applies not only to a teacher, but to all of us. So our practice, we can see, is a process of cleaning ourselves. Not that we're dirty, but like with the bowls, you know, there can be things that are stuck in the bowls, crumbs that need to be swept up. Same thing in our lives, right? In our path, as we walk this path and awaken more and more and open more and more, it's as if we're cleaning ourselves. It's like we do with our Oryoki bowls. And then the water that comes from that is what we share. It tastes like ambrosia, and that's what we share. So we basically share what we have transmuted in ourselves, what we think of as usually the bad things in ourselves or the suffering. It's transmuted through our practice and then becomes ambrosia. I always speak about an experience. You know, I'm not telling you anything that I haven't experienced. And that's like this water that we share that tastes like ambrosia is experience. And we don't do it. So while I'm living my life, I was going to say, while I'm doing my life, I'm not thinking I'm doing this so I can offer it to the various spirits to satisfy them. I'm living my life fully with the knowledge that I'm sharing it with the various spirits to satisfy them. I'm not doing it in order to, but I know that that's what I'm doing, something like that. But Orioke is really an amazing thing, huh? You know, the other thing that I did notice in Portugal, I did notice this, and I didn't find a moment to say it, but I will. Or if any of you hear this and then you're teaching Orioke, you can remind people of this. It's a story that I have told many times. People who've been around have heard this story, but when Gennaroshi gathered all of the seniors, you know, we were like probably had been practicing for 4 years or something. We were the seniors. She gathered us together to be sure that we all knew the forms so that we were all doing the same thing. Nobody was an expert. Nobody really knew what they were doing. We just kind of were learning things. And so we looked at how to do the Jikido. We looked at how to do the Eno. We looked at how to do the Doan. We looked at, you know, how to enter the Zendo, bowing, whatever, everything like that. How to hold the books when we chant. That's another thing that I have not transmitted to people, which I should. And we got to Orioke. And we would discuss these forms as we were going on, the group. You know, there were a lot of people. There were probably 10 people. And we would discuss things and make sure that everybody was clear on it and whatever. We got to Orioke, and I had this really brilliant discovery I had made in Orioke that at the end, when you sweep the crumbs off, you know, when you clean the cloth, after the bowls are clean and they're all on the left side, you take your, and after you've given the water and dried the bowl, the last bowl, and you've put it there, and you sweep off your place setting, your placemat. And you do, this is what it's supposed to be, you do a Z, chick, 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 and then you move the bowls all the way to the right, and you do an N, chick, chick, chick. And I thought this was ridiculous. I thought I had discovered this brilliant mistake in Orioke that there was no point to wipe the middle twice. That, okay, you did it once when the bowls were on the left. So all you needed to do was move the bowls to the middle and then clean where the bowls had been before. And so that's how I was doing Orioke because I thought this was really brilliant. And so when this point came, when we were going through Orioke, I raised my hand, you know, and I presented my brilliant discovery that no one throughout the centuries had found. And everyone, my peers, just kind of looked at me like, what? And Roshi looked at me and she said, just do it, Amy. Moment of great liberation. I mean, wow. I could let go of being this brilliant discoverer of a hole in Orioke. I could let go of thinking this was the best way to do it. Everybody else was stupid because they didn't do this, because they did this. They just followed the stupid rule. I could let go of it all and just do it. Just do it. Amazing. Orioke, amazing, you know? Tiny little thing we think is just totally insignificant And yet, wow, it changed in a big part of my practice that moment. And as I looked around when I was in Portugal, I don't think anybody was doing the Z and the N, or even really doing anything methodical about moving the bowls or not. Everybody just kind of took their rag and kind of went like this, and I take responsibility for this because I'm the one who's supposed to be teaching you this stuff, and I obviously it wasn't the message wasn't passed. Now, Bart was sitting next to me. I don't remember what Bart was doing. I didn't notice what Bart was doing. I was looking more wide, And Tiago was a server, and João was in the kitchen, and Nunu was sitting in a place that I couldn't really see. So I don't know what any of them were doing. But the people who I did notice were not doing it. So, no, Tiago was in the kitchen too. He was not a server. Yeah, they were both in the kitchen. Yeah. These things we think are just absolutely not important are essential. There's like Mizumi Roshi said, everything is important. Everything is really is important. Someone did point out, I think it was Lisa, because Lisa had given the instructions for the new people on Oroki instructions. And so then during a Samu meeting, she reminded people of how to hold the spoon when they were eating. Because that's another thing that people, if they weren't told that, then they don't know, So it, she realized she hadn't mentioned it. And so she very, responsibly said, this is how you hold the spoon. And this is how we eat. Because it's important. It's different. It changes the way we hold the spoon, the way we walk, the way we clean dishes. Everything matters, Everything's important. And to stay with this theme that I began in the beginning of this generous gesture of offering this dirty cleaning water to the various spirits to satisfy them. It's very specific. I offer this to the various spirits to satisfy them so that they will be satisfied. So that if they're thirsty, they won't be thirsty anymore. So if they're hungry, they won't be hungry anymore. So if they need clothing, attention, whatever it is, and we give ourselves entirely to it. If we give ourselves entirely to Oroki, that's the same thing as, offering this to the various spirits to satisfy them. We give ourselves entirely to whatever we do. And I'm reminded of, I can't remember exactly what the words are in Japanese, but in Dogen's instructions to the cook, he talks about the three heart minds that are necessary for a cook. Of course, the whole book is a metaphor for living, addressed to a cook in a kitchen and preparing meals, but it applies to the whole of life. And he has these three heart minds, and I can't remember what the Japanese words are, but there's the joyful heart mind, the elder or parental or nurturing heart mind, and the great or the big or the magnanimous heart mind. In Chinese and Japanese, that word heart mind is shin, which is interesting that in our Western languages, we've translated only, we've dropped the heart, and we've only kept the mind. But it's actually heart mind. It's not the thinking mind, and it's not just the heart, what we think of as heart. It's heart mind. And he gives these three different types of mind that are essential for a cook. And, you know, I can't really define them as well as Dogen can, but we can see that all three of them involve not holding on to an identity, a fixed idea, a position, a project, you know, like not projecting ahead or grasping, not, you know, not thinking that. So if we looked at the meal, you know, the cook is preparing the meal and takes pleasure in what she or he is doing. With that, but if there is, you know, this stress and this anxiety about, oh, it's not going to be good, I don't know how to do this, the people aren't doing it right, even ourselves, we can see this when we're doing something. Now, if we're caught up in the utility of it, what's the point, or if we're caught up in a result, it's very difficult to take joy simply in what we're doing, to just enjoy it. Just enjoy preparing the meal. And that's where it comes with this, you know, infamous cutting carrots. We always use that example, but it could be anything. It can be anything that you're doing in the kitchen. It could be sweeping the floor in the kitchen. It can be washing the dishes. It could be drying the dishes, putting the dishes away. It could be looking at the ingredients and saying, what will I make today? There are cooks who do that. They have no idea. They walk in, they look at the ingredients, and they use what's there. And they take joy in that. There are other cooks who would not find that joyful, who might be too involved with the stress and therefore like to have more structure. And there's nothing wrong with that, because then that allows them to be more joyful. To have their, that gives some structure so that their mind can be more joyful. And we can see that for ourselves too in our regular activities of daily life. And the elder nurturing, sometimes we say grandmotherly parental mind, heart mind, is one of care, taking care. A kind mind, maybe something like that. Kindful mind. Taking care of the aspects of the meal. I'm just staying with Dogen's metaphor. Taking care of the products that we're using. Taking care of the utensils, the dishes. Taking care of the helpers. Taking care of oneself, you know, it's a nurturing, friendly, parental mind, treating everything as if it was your child, your only child, maybe say something like that. Everyone and everything. And we can see how that affects then what we do and how we behave. You know, that's the nurturing mind that takes great joy in offering this to the various spirits to satisfy them. That gesture of nurturing and parental and elder brings great joy. You know, it's not always easy, of course. And sometimes, you know, sometimes we say, you know, in the old koan stories and things where there's some master who's doing something that's not very nice, we say that the master is filled with grandmotherly kindness, you know, has grandmotherly heart mind. Well, the reason we say that is because it's like a parent who is doing something, saying something to a child or behaving with a child in a way that might seem strict or not friendly or angry or something. But in the elder nurturing heart mind, we know that we're doing it from a compassionate place, and we're doing it for, we're offering that to the child in the position of a parent, so that they will be satisfied, not with their punishment or whatever it is, but so that their life, they will be able to pursue their life path in a full way. Because children need guidance, right? And the guidance is not always, oh yeah, hey, you're doing a great job, you know. Sometimes it has to do, you know, other things. Sometimes we have to, you know, insist that the children study, you know, that they stay in their room and they don't play video games or whatever it is they distract themselves with. That's a nurturing parental heart mind in there. It can be reminding, you know, the cook in the kitchen, it can be the cook reminding people, saying, oh no, that's not how we want those carrots to be cut. It can be correcting and saying, no, this is how it's to be done. Or it can be reminding people to be silent in the kitchen. Or it can, you know, be reminding people to come when they're supposed to be washing the dishes. Maybe they were out having a cigarette and chatting in the corner with somebody, and you're raining on their parade. But it's coming from a place of compassion. It's coming from this elder parental mind. And then his other one, which is great mind, big mind, magnanimous mind, is the one that embraces it all, that can that is wide enough to hold the other two minds, and is wide enough to see the non-separation, to let, that has no problem letting go of the project, because knows that the project is already what they're doing. This is like the wisdom heart mind. The elder heart mind is the compassion heart mind. Well, we could say that the magnanimous includes both, because true wisdom does include both. Includes compassion and wisdom. And there's not one, we see that they're not separate. So that the great, the big, the magnanimous mind holds it all. And is able to carry everyone and everything. Include everyone and everything, let's say. Yeah. And therefore, when, say, the example of correcting someone and saying that's not how we want the carrots to be cut, it will not be said with a, in French we'd say revendication, you know, it would not be said with like reprimanding or accusing, saying you're wrong, that's bad. It would be just warmly saying this is how it is, because there's no attachment to an I who says it should be this way. So it's like when we offer this water to the various spirits, it's not like we try to make our water special, you know, to like have our water go in a different part of the bowl. If we did try to do that, we'd be in trouble because it wouldn't work. But when we're holding back some water for ourselves, it's not very magnanimous, you know. That magnanimous great big mind is not really present. If we're drinking the water first and then giving a little drop to the bowl, or pouring a little bit into the server's bowl and then saving the rest for ourselves. Once in a while, we might be thirsty and we might need to drink that water to satisfy. We are one of the various spirits, so okay, maybe we need to satisfy ourselves. I think we can probably wait the 5 minutes that it's going to be when we fold up the bowls and go out and have a drink after, you know. Um, So that gesture, that seemingly unimportant small gesture of offering that dirty dishwater to the various spirits to satisfy them, is, can we take joy in that? Can we carry that loving parental mind and do it, you know, with care? So that we also say, and this is in Orioki too, when you pour that water in the bowl, you're supposed to put your hand like this so it doesn't splash the server. You're supposed to pour, I don't have a bowl here or something to show you, but so you have the bowl, the server is holding the bowl, and you pour the water like this and you protect the server so that the server doesn't get splashed. It's very loving and caring. That's the elder caring mind that's doing that. So all of this came up just from that, a moment of flash in the meeting that we had. And I don't even know if it was Saturday or yesterday that it happened, but. And then I thought about it again today. If we really listen to that Orioki chant, it's really rich. There's so much in there. Maybe we should study it in the study group, actually, now that I think about it. Yeah, maybe we will. That's a good idea. Okay, maybe I'll stop there and let you speak, share, question, whatever. Debbie.
Yeah, this is wonderful, because since this came up in the Dome where you said you offered the ambrosia, I went back to how I got on the wrong track in the first place. And it was a long time ago. Scott was my neighbor and knew more about Orioki than I did. He was sitting next to me. And at some point after Orioki, he said, my friends in England, when I say I'm going to Paris, they always say, ooh, Paris. And I don't tell them I'm sitting in an attic drinking dishwater. Because he was, in fact, the only thing he did in Paris was go to get ambrosias. And I guess in my mind, it stuck that we had to drink the dishwater. That was like 20 years ago. So ever since, it never dawned on me, you know, how you can get stuck on a mistake. So I'm glad you cleared this up in the last time we were together, because it's been going on for a long time. But that's how it started, yeah.
Well, you know, it is possible that we could say that by drinking it, we're offering it to the various spirits, because we also are the various spirits. So maybe people have different interpretations. I don't know what Scott's is, but... but what you describe, that's exactly how we pick stuff up. You know, we look at other people and we see what they do, or we, you know, there's so much information when we learn Orioki that some of it just slips away and we forget, and we're just trying to get through it, you know, and then we don't really pay much attention, or we do. Often what happens, like in Portugal, the whole one side of the Zendo was all new people who had just learned Orioki. And that was not good, because then they kind of look at each other and it's the blind leading the blind, you know. So totally understand that's where it comes from, that kind of thing. Yeah. No.
Yeah. So, good evening, everyone. It's funny that you talked about this Orioki issue, because I noticed when I was there at the Orioki, I noticed that people next to me, I was very proud of still doing my Z and the N. And I noticed that person right next to me, not it's like that didn't mind. And then I got that feeling that it took me a while to drop that that sense of superiority, obviously, because, oh, I know how to do it. It's a Z and an N, and you're doing it wrong. And then I don't know. It's the first time. It's so confusing. Each time I do work, I never remember if it's the N first or the Z after. Sometimes I don't remember also if it is an N or that Russian I, the mirror N. And so it is funny. And this brings me back to the, to my practice. Because when I started practicing Zen, I was in Hawaii, and it was in a Rinzai temple from Omori Soga, Japanese teacher, very connected to martial arts. And so they were very strict. And we were trying to sit 45 minutes without moving. That's it. Otherwise, you would be whacked with a stick, and which actually rarely happened. But never mind. We were there, stressed about it. And the funny thing is, okay, eventually you manage, you train, and you manage to sit for 45 minutes without moving, and then I came back to Portugal. I noticed that we could move if we really need to. It was not that strict. And obviously I thought, oh, I'm much better because I can sit for 45 minutes without moving. And then I broke my meniscus. And so, a meniscus tear. I got surgery. Well, basically, I can no longer sit for more than one period, cross-legged. I can do it once, but that's it. Then I have to go to the chair or something else. And it took me a very long time. It's deep down, it's still here, that I felt that I'm no longer able to do it properly. That thing, I cannot do it properly anymore. So it's not the same thing. And it's hard to drop this, to let go of this superiority thing because I'm doing the right technique or the right thing. And it is, so it's very interesting. The time it takes for me, it took me, and for most of us, I guess, to drop some notions. And in my case, when I was dealing with that, I always remembered when you, Amy, you talked about that story about to just do it. I reversed it in just do it, like sitting in a chair, because you can no longer do it in the other way. And so I wanted to share this with you because that's what has happened with me. But inevitably, when I'm at the Zendo, I'm always comparing myself with others and the others, with the techniques and this, everything. I'm always comparing it. At least I am. It takes hours, days until you start to drop all that stuff. And that is fine. Thank you.
Yeah, I think everybody can relate. And probably everyone's thinking, oh no, I compare more than you do. You know. Yep. And it's really beautiful when we can say just do it. Because it's either this or not, you know. That was very strong for me in my practice, was because I had kids and a job and, you know, the whole thing. If when the moment came when I could sit, it was not my ideal, but it was either that or not. So just do it then, you know, when the window opened. And there's great strength that comes from that. And like you, Nunu, I can't sit cross-legged either, so. Sue?
Yeah, it's only to say that it's so strong, that story that I remember all the time that I do. Just do it. Just do it. I remember all the time. It's for me and some new people, and everything changes, and I look at the others and okay, it's okay. Just do it. Okay, it's okay. Yeah, this, yeah, it's in the memory that you are what Ganarashi said to you, it's coming to us.
Yeah. And so I'm sorry if I repeat that story regularly, but that's what it is. That's kind of an illustration, what you just said, say, of what it is we do, you know. I'm just passing on what I received. And it's my experience, what I received my experience, you know, in a sense. And I have a wonderful teacher who point, you know, who said that wonderful thing. And then I pass it on to you. That's what it is. Not any kind of big mystical thing, you know. We just share our experience and it has meaning, may or it doesn't, you know. For some people, maybe that story doesn't have any meaning whatsoever. But if it has meaning for you, then that's what's important. Bart.
Yeah, thank you for sharing. About the Ryoki thing, I was really surprised by Lisa's instruction on the how to hold the spoon and to feed yourself like a baby is being fed, in a way. I think I never really heard that instruction in Zen heart, or first time I had instruction on Oryoki was probably in Ghent by Frank himself. And I remember that he was really quite specific on many details. And since then, I always have tried to pay attention to how my teacher is exactly doing things and trying to ask about it. And still, I never heard about it. Same thing about holding the hand before giving back the water. So this is really going on and on. This is never ending, which is good. Another aspect of this, in the beginning of practice, I was really, I think I was struck on how do I do this practice, how this form has to be done, and how it became really tense. The good thing of practice in at least in the dana branch is that it is also very relaxed in a way. This practice, you cannot do it in a wrong way. You do it in just this way. Then again, it's really helpful to hear this instruction tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. And I would suspect that maybe there are things that Frank told you that I don't pass on, you know, that maybe he told you some. I remember that there was a dispute in this meeting that we had. This was, you know, 25 years ago. But there was a dispute because Frank said that, can't remember what it is, that the spoon in the little case is supposed to be like this. Or like this, I can't remember which one it was, so that the spatula rests on it better. And Roshi kind of was like, "What? what are you talking about? You know, and he said, no, that's how I learned it. And she said, well, who taught you? And he said, Tenke, Anton, who was Genroshi's Dharma brother. And she said, no, it's not possible. We both learned it from Genpo, and I never learned that. So, you know, there's stuff that gets passed on and others that don't. So Prank may have told you how to put the spoon in, and I probably don't tell people. I don't know. And the point is to not miss the point, you know. That's like Suzuki Roshi said, you know, the most important thing is to remember the most important thing. So, and as Bart points out in Dana, it's relaxed in that sense because we know that that's what it is. We know that it's not so much exactly how we hold the spoon that's important, but what we put into it, what our intention is, where our heart is.
For years, I drank the last drop, you know, like you teach me, and I still remember when you teached us in the first retreat, and I remember a lot of details, certainly not all of them, but a lot of why we do what and so on. And then, weirdly, once I observed someone drink more than only the last drop, you know, keep some water and drink it. And I thought, oh, that's a good idea, you know, without, you know, now it seems to me so obvious. Of course, you don't do that, but there I thought, oh yeah, that's a good idea. Because I still remember in the first retreat, oh yeah, when I saw it the first time, I thought, huh? But that's the dishwater, you know, that's dirty, or like, and then I thought about it and I said, well, it's just hot water with lemon and the rest of what anyway I have eaten. So, you know, it completely changed my view of this water also. And but then I did that too, but not aware of that it's not what we're supposed to do, you know. No.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
Amazing. And we all have these stories like that. Yeah.
And I think it would be interesting to do a recap a few years later, or you know, because I also observe some differences that not everybody does the same thing or does things in the same way, and yeah, so probably it hasn't been remembered in the same way or passed on in the same way. I don't know.
Yep. Both, I think, you know,
Yeah.
because it is so much information to take in that we didn't hear it or we forgot it or something. And then also the person who's teaching, you know, they forgot to say something or didn't themselves learn something, or I don't know, you know. And I'm making it sound like my way is the gospel, but it's not. I mean, it's my. This is what I learned from my teacher. That's, you know, and that's what I pass on. So.
Yeah, and of course, so when I see someone do something else, I immediately think, oh, that's not the right way to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
May I say something else? just like to, well, highlight this. Well, it's a feeling I usually have with in this sangha, and by discussing this, it's again the same thing. It's the mere fact that we do not do everything in the same way. I say everybody does not do things properly, let's say, makes us to discuss it. And so we are already discussing a lot of things, like why we bow three times, and how do we bow, and why do we lift the hands and the at the end. And so the meaning of the things we do, that if we learned, like in a recipe, how to do it, and we do it, you follow the instructions, and everybody was flawless, we would never talk about it. Probably we'll never think about it, we'll never discuss it. And so I think that's so it's the beauty of making mistakes, in the sense that there was a defined way that forces us to discuss it. And then we realize the meaning of it. Otherwise, we would not see it, probably. So that's something I really enjoy. I just like to say that. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so when I hear that, I'm thinking, yes, it's because it's alive, you know? It's alive what we're doing. And if it was just like some stiff ritual, and everybody would be perfect, you know, and it would be no problem. And we wouldn't talk about it, like you say. But it's alive, and we're human beings, and that's great. It's beautiful, yeah. Yep. Well, maybe we can end there with our vows. And everyone chants the vows differently. Of course, now our mics are all off except the one person who we hear, but even that one person chants differently than the others.
Joelle, do you mind? And I'll do the dedication.
Sure.
You might stop the recording first, Debbie.
Yes. Go, Duffer.